This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Sabre season comes to an end with a win over the Philadelphia Flyers. And we'll talk about how things wrapped up and get back to your phone calls in a moment. Jeremy and Joe, as the Sabre season ends with a win, Paul. So they closed their home schedule. If you went to games late in the year, you got your money's worth. They won an awful lot of games at KeyBank Center down the stretch.
Yeah, they finally made it a place that was difficult to play in and that they actually had a home, quote, home field advantage, as you'd like to say. So they played better at home, and now they got to figure out the road schedule and, how to at least get yourself to 500 or better on the road. You do that and continue to play like you played at home for a lot of this year, I think he got a shot at the playoffs.
Paul Hamilton with us. Paul, from last night's game, the team look energized to you to get a win at the end of it?
Yeah, as Lindy Ruff said, it was one of those games where there wasn't any hitting. It's just kind of like the teams were, let's get it out of here. There were a lot of chances. Like Peyton Krebs had 4 breakaways.
Yeah,
he scored on one of them. Both teams were kind of trading chances, and it wasn't huge intensity. I mean, Buffalo really got out quickly. It looked like Philadelphia was ready to just head for the bus, and that was the end of that. And all of a sudden, it turned, and it was Buffalo actually. Buffalo had a power play where it didn't look good at all. And all of a sudden, Philadelphia got some great opportunities shorthanded, and all of a sudden the Flyers took the game over. And now they started scoring goals. They had a lot of the chances. Buffalo wasn't getting any chances at all. And it looked like, for a while it looked like the Sabres were going to blow the game. But the Flyers got to within a goal, and then the Sabres finally straightened it out a little bit. They scored. And Jack Quinn got called for goaltender interference, so that didn't count. Yeah. And finally, they got the empty netter to put it away.
Yeah, always good to have reviews and meet like the end of seasons when the games.
You have to be reminded before the season's over that about the reviews and how much you enjoy them.
Yeah, Quinn, Paul, they flashed his numbers on the screen. His stats against the Flyers. His season comes to an end, and I don't know. Is he definitely back? He's an RFA, right? So there's something to be decided there. And his season was what? half of it was a lost season, and then it kind of showed glimmers of what he used to be. What should Sabres fans expect from Jack Quinn going forward?
Yeah, I think that's you described it perfectly. I think for me, he would get a qualifying offer, and that would be that. I would basically sign him to his qualifying offer. I wouldn't be looking to sign him for a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal or an 8-year deal or anything like that. I would need to see more of what we saw more towards the end of the year than we saw during the year, and see what kind of off season he put together. But you know, Paterka, yes, I'd be looking for the long term. Of course, Bo Byram, I'm not convinced he wants to stay here. I don't know if he knows what he wants to do. You know, but I would look for him. I'd be looking to, you know, get Alex Tuch figured out. But as far as Jack Quinn goes, I would offer him his qualifying offer and basically give him a take it or leave it.
Yeah, I was actually just going to bring up Byram, Paul, because I've heard you mention how you've asked him before about staying around long term and, you know, maybe being part of the core, and that he's never really given that strong indication that he wants to, not that he said, like, I want to leave. And I was listening that when you did your pregame interview with him the other day, and I thought the exact same thing when you asked him that question. Like, he just never makes me feel like he wants to be here on a long-term deal. So you feel the same way? And then also on his game, because you had mentioned there were times early in the year where you thought he was their best defenseman on certain nights. He gets split from Dahlin, and I don't know, how'd you feel like the season ended for him after he was playing with a different partner?
You know, he still was good, but that's always his best when he was with Dahlin. I still would like to see him sign a long-term deal. I still, you know, like him as a defenseman. One thing I thought he got a lot better at this year was blocking shots. I mean, he became an excellent shot blocker as the season went on. But, you know, I felt the same way you did, that, you know, he always just avoids the question. And it's like, well, you know, I have a decision to make. And
he called it a big summer, which
right.
is a little weird for an RFA that actually, I think I read, he has 2 years until he can get the UFA status. I don't know. But either way, calling it a big summer is a little interesting.
Yeah, and it'd be a situation like, you know, Sam Reinhart. Sam Reinhart had decided, hey, you know, this organization has never offered me a long-term deal. And, you know, I've done everything they've asked me to do on the ice, and he's right. I totally understand why he would feel that, you know what, if they don't appreciate me, I don't want to be here. So he just said, look, I owe you one more year. I'll play it. You know, I'll sign for the one more year before I become, and then that's it. I'm leaving. So he at least gave them the option, and, you know, Byram could do the same thing. Say, you know, I'll sign a 2-year contract or whatever it is until I get to unrestricted free agency, but I'm not interested in anything more than that. And that would give the Sabres a year or two to find him a new home and get a decent trade value back in return.
James Reimer finishes out the season in net, Paul. His future is to be determined. The Sabres, they keep finding themselves in this spot where an aging goaltender has a reasonably good season, and then the choice is retirement or Buffalo, right? Like, Craig Anderson was this. Like, is he going to come back? And now with Reimer, he's going to discuss it with his family and decide what he wants to do.
Right. I mean, he'll be 38 years old next year. And so he doesn't know what he'd like to do. I don't know, standing there looking him in the eye and talking to him, I kind of got the impression that maybe he's done. Maybe he's going to retire. I that's just an impression I got. He didn't say that, but just the way he was talking and everything, it's like, you know, it's been a long, great career, and, you know, he enjoyed playing here, but it just sounded like, you know, he's going to sit down with his family. And you know how, you know, guys get it. It's like my family has basically sacrificed so I can have a hockey career, and now it's time for me maybe to sit down and reverse my priorities. And so I don't know. I just got the impression that he might be leaning towards retirement, but could be talked out of it, maybe.
Yeah. What about the kids, Paul, that played a little bit at the end that were called up? Oslund and Roseanne was kind of back and forth and never really flashed, I thought, when he was up here. Either one of those guys make you think about their long-term futures, and then even, I don't think either are much, well, I don't know, you tell me, about their candidacy for making the team next year.
Yeah, I just never really got hugely impressed with Roseanne, and he kept coming up and down and up and down and up and down. The last time he was here, I thought might have been his best, where he had a game where, you know, okay, yeah, it looks like maybe he's starting to get it a little bit. Oslund, I really liked him a lot. Not enough that I want to say, you know what, he needs to be here next year. I still think he needs to be in Rochester. I'd stop making the mistake as an organization of rushing these guys up here like they have a lot of them. And, you know, I think that's part of the reason they're still in this spot, because really good players, young players got rushed up here, and some of them had a good year and then regressed. And so I think he could make the team next year, maybe, and be okay. I would rather see him continue in Rochester. I would rather see them fill some roster spots with some veterans. Well, they don't need to be filling them right now with more youngsters. I think part of the reason is that they're where they are is because they had too many youngsters. So, you know, any roster spots you have for next year, I think, need to be filled by some veteran hockey players.
Paul Hamilton. Paul, the plan is for locker cleanup, and we expect to hear from Lindy and Kevin Adams tomorrow?
Yeah, we're going to have some extended programming, usually on Saturday. As you know, we're done at 2 o'clock. We're going to go keep going. Derek Kramer and Joe Colley will go for a little while. Then Brian Kozio will come in. And basically, you know, they're going to do a show from 2 until they speak.
Okay.
And you don't know really when. They're hoping to be around 4:30, but you don't know how long players are going to talk to Lindy Ruff or how long they're going to talk to Kevin Adams. I mean, you know, Rasmus Dahlin may sit down. He could talk 15 minutes with each guy. He could talk an hour with each guy, you know, in which case the schedule gets all thrown off. So, you know, you will hear both men on WGR Sports Radio 550 live when they do speak. They're hoping to be around 4:30, but you just don't know. It could be earlier, it could be later. And in the meantime, you'll hear all those folks continue on with Sports Talk Saturday until it happens.
All right. You guys will be going indefinitely. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't go like 9 p.m. because it'll be it's a lot of you know,
sports thunder.
Chat on a Saturday.
And for folks, this being Good Friday, it's going to be our local programming throughout the day. And you will hear, you know, as we talk to Rasmus Dahlin or Alex Tucker, Tage Thompson, you know, I'll be getting those interviews back to the station, and the guys will be playing those both today and tomorrow. So you'll be able to hear what the players are saying as we go along for the next 2 days.
See if they've got fish fry recommendations, Paul, while you're at it, you know, being Good Friday.
It's the only thing I'm going to ask is about fish fries. Where are you guys going for your fish fry when you're done here?
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Paul.
Take care.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Eye on the Blue and Gold all day tomorrow. Eye on the Blue and Gold to get those end-of-season pressers started. That's brought to you by Great Lakes Building Systems. We keep an eye on your business so you don't have to. Great Lakes Building Systems. Our business is protecting your business. We have a lot of people want to chime in on the bill, so stick with us. We'll get right to the break, right back to your calls, and we're open the rest of the way. Have a few callers on hold with some good questions, good topics to bring up. Stick with us if you can. Jeremy and Joe, right back to your calls on this sunny Friday.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Optimize your nutrition this year with Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal service. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved, ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from 40 weekly options across 8 dietary preferences like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Eat smarter at factormeals.com/listen50 and use code LISTEN50 for 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. Factormeals.com/listen50. Code LISTEN50.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide, or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball, the game's official home for games, is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
On WGR.
Caller 5 right now, 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. Wins a pair of lawn tickets to see Breaking Benjamin and 3 Days Grace, September 17th at Darien Lake Amphitheater, courtesy of Live Nation. Tickets are on sale at livenation.com. Did you listen to that Tage Thompson clip?
I did.
Did it do anything for you? Did it just sound like hockey player stuff, or did it do anything for
you? No, I like that he admitted that he and Dahlin have like a maybe a healthy friction's not maybe the he didn't use that word, but like that they give it to one another, that they're hard on one another, and I think a good team should have that. I think the best players on the team should be demanding of one another, especially.
Me too. I wonder if Dahlin would say the same thing. Maybe he did.
But I heard a good chunk of him. I don't know about good. I heard a few minutes of him. I don't know how long he spoke for, so I shouldn't try to pin it down, like how much of it I heard. You know, it's funny. On one hand, he made a point about how, you know, you need to have experience. We're still such a young team, even though, you know, we've been together, some of us, a long time already, but there's still a lot of young players here, and you have to learn how to do things and the right way to do things and how to play all the time and all these sorts of things. And he got done with that and was asked another question about, I think it was specifically about what did you and Kevin talk about? And he said, well, you know, I don't want to get into specifics of that. The question after that was, do you think there need to be more experienced players here? Because he opened the door to that, right, by saying what he said about you need to have experience. And I could feel him being uncomfortable. I'm not positive he was, but it just... Because what are you asking me? Do I think we need to trade Zach Benson for someone who's 28 years old? Like, he got to, I'm not the GM, eventually. And I just knew he felt like, oh, God, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
I trapped myself. I made the point about needing experience, and now you're asking me whether we need, you know, tough spot for the captain there.
Well, I just felt like maybe Thompson was saying that Dahlin gets on him. But I have a tough time imagining Thompson getting on anyone else, especially Dahlin, maybe. Mm. And that might not be fair. But, you know, he's like, yeah, we're hard on each other, and he's hard on me, and I accept that. I wonder, like, if that's mutual.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it needs to be, but I don't see Thompson as, like, that guy, right?
No.
Does he have to be? No. But it was just kind of interesting how he went to Dahlin for that.
He, I think... He is a very interesting piece on the team, Thompson, because he is not young. He's reestablished himself as a star. You know, I think if next season begins, we'll see what he does at the World Championships, which he has said he's very happy and proud to be given an opportunity to do that because he wants to make the Olympic team. And I think if he has, but he starts next season the way this season ended for him, it would blow my mind if he doesn't make the Olympic team. He, you know, there's an argument to be made he should have been on the Four Nations face-off team, but he wasn't having, he really wasn't, it was almost after that happened that he got healthy enough or just whatever happened, it just, he sort of took off again. So he's got a lot to play for. The thing that I think is interesting about him is I think he, it wouldn't surprise me if Dahlin is hard on him because I think he brain locks pretty regularly. And look, you have to live. He's an incredible talent, and there is no way I am making a case that they'd be better off without him at all. Okay, so just hear me out here. But he does make mistakes. Like, he is not the headiest guy all the time as far as the situation goes and get it deep, you know, time left in the period, that kind of, like, I feel like he just sort of gets lost sometimes. And he's your best forward, and they're trying to build a team that is responsible 200 feet. And he's already been bumped out of center because it seems pretty clear Lindy Ruff does not trust him to carry out the duties that he feels are required of a center. And, you know, it's fine. It's working well on the wing. He's just someone who, I think if you really go through the, like, mistakes that get made, he's at the scene of the crime more than you'd like for someone who's as important to the team and wears a letter. I just think sometimes he just forgets, that doesn't sound right, but I just think he gets locked up sometimes and doesn't necessarily do the right thing, the best thing with the puck, especially like maybe high in the offensive zone.
Led the league in even strength goals, 37, led the league alone. Draisaitl was second. Saw the picture of Owen from 2011.
Oh, geez, with the Vanek hat, the lucky hat.
I mean, yep. Obviously he doesn't wear it anymore because it's been 14 years and they haven't been to the playoffs once. There's just no shortage of ways. There are just so many ways to try to put in perspective what this is, 14 years without. It is kind of incredible that we had the Bills drought, which was at the time the longest in professional sports, one of the longest ever in the NFL. This is easily the longest ever in hockey. And it's not over. And just like there's just no end to how many different ways you can think about that.
Right.
Your kid's age.
Right. Oh, and in this picture, Mike is referencing, and I didn't check the date, but that showed, I didn't go looking for that to try to make a point. It just showed up in my Facebook feed as a memory from this date in 2011, which I believe is the morning of Game 7. Between the Sabres and the Flyers, right? And we had the hat earlier in the series, and then it went missing, and he found it. And that's why I posted on Facebook, like, lucky hat. There it is. There's a picture of my kid, 9 years old, right? Like, Owen's a grown man. He works here. I mean, it's incredible to think about, like, that. He's a little pudgy kid in this picture. It blows my mind.
That's what I mean. Like, you can do it through all kinds of different ways. In my family's case, like, my daughter has not been alive for a Sabres playoff game. She owns 3 hotels. Like, that's just, it really tells you how long it's been. I mean, that's so many years ago. Imagine the Bills at, you know, what, 2012. 11-12 is the first year of the Sabres drought. So there are the Bills at about 12 years into their drought. And I were to tell you that the Bills would win 5 AFC East titles in a row before the Sabres go back to the playoffs. And it's not even going to start for a while, right? It's not even going to start until 2020.
Right.
But they're going to win 5 division titles in a row. The Kelly team didn't do that.
I would have never taken that bet.
How could you even process that?
Yeah, like, no, right.
You might have even said yes to it if it was an offer. I'll give you the Bills winning 5 division titles in a row before the next Sabres playoff game. Like, all right, maybe that, I'll sign for that.
Right.
And here we are 14 years later, and it's still where we're at. I mean, the fact that there's only one player in the league, Tyler Myers, played for the Sabres in a postseason game. The fact it's surreal that Ruff is again their coach, despite all of this. You know, like he's back and he's staying. I don't know. So many different pieces, different perspectives you could have on it. It's just really incredible. And it's always, I think, a challenge to sort of figure out why. Like, what was it? You've got the league leader in even strength goals. You've got Dahlin, who's as good as ever. He's almost as good as anybody in the league at his position. And no, not even really close. Didn't even really come close to the playoffs. Just year after year, it's something different.
Right. Yeah, Montreal was at a standstill 4 years ago, and they're back. Ottawa, similarly, like they Detroit and Buffalo were. Montreal, I felt like, was maybe even... Once Suzuki and Caulfield didn't immediately change their fortunes, I was like, they're going to be a while. But and look, there's probably some good fortune involved there, but whatever, they got there. What do they have? They've got an elite couple of score. Well, at least Caulfield's elite scorer. Suzuki's nice. The defenseman, the kid that's going to win Rookie of the Year in a runaway, is a witch. Hudson, if you haven't been paying attention because you're dead inside because of the Sabres. Montreal's got a guy that's going to be in the conversation with the best guys. All right, he's really little, but he's incredible player with the puck and just skates like the wind. He's your classic 21st century NHL defenseman, is what he is. You know, I don't know if fans in Montreal are going to be mad at him because it didn't cross-check people in the teeth or whatever, but he's incredible. And then they add this Demidov kid, and I almost texted you both nights I was watching him play. Because the first night he had an assist and a goal in like the first 10 minutes of the first period. The game they clinched the other night, he didn't get on the score sheet. But I'm telling you, the arena, and of course, there's a lot of hype, so you're excited. It's a new guy. Man, he just is making plays. He is a talent. Like, I'd be stunned if he doesn't have some impact on the playoffs. I don't know if he can help them upset Washington, but nobody's got anything on how he's going to be used. They're going to put him on the power play in some, you know, fine, after they play a couple games, maybe you'll have an idea, but... He is high-end talent, this kid. And, I mean, Paul and I have gone round and round on him already a couple times. I'm going to not bring it up today because I don't want to submarine our whole segment yelling at Paul about this because Paul just thinks that he's a kid. He won't, tell me when he does something. I'm like, well, he's already doing something. He
looks How about now?
He looks fantastic. So Montreal has blown past you.
I wonder if Montreal is what kind of an underdog they are. Like, are they... Has it been so long? You and I grew up with the Canadians lording over the division, the league even. Has it been so long? 30 years. Like, has it been so long now that sort of, are they cool? Or are they still 24 cups Montreal, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I got to stop short of, you know, rooting for them exactly. Because they're supposed to be a rival, but... I don't know. This is one of those things that happens when your team is a non-entity, a non-factor in the conversation. You know, the stories to me that are the best are the Canadian teams. So, I don't know. Go Habs. Go Toronto. I don't know. I feel filthy saying that, but I want to see those teams do well.
Toronto or Ottawa for that?
I think I would still lean Toronto. Ottawa still annoys me. They're also awesome, but they Ottawa, there's more history, more recent history there.
There's all those years where they couldn't beat the Leafs. They had the better team in every one of those series, I think. I was still rooting for the Leafs some in those days, like 2002 around there, and it would just be like, no matter what happens here, they're going to win. The Leafs are going to win. All their veterans that they would load up on and... Just what goaltending, like just somehow they would always win. That's a long time ago, too. Maybe this year will be different. Now the story is how Toronto can't win in the playoffs, and Ottawa hasn't even been there for a long time, so it's fresh. At least in terms of Ottawa, it's fresh. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. Sal coming up at 5. This is WGR.
I'm Emma Grade, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I fully expected us to be right there in a playoff spot or competing and feel that we should have been based on the talent on our roster. So it's disappointing. Yeah, the exhausted part's probably right because it takes a toll. You know, I'm not just on me, but everybody in the fan base and everybody in this town when the team isn't performing at the level that is expected. So in saying that, you have to look in the mirror, and I do that. I start with myself, and what do we need to do? What do I need to do? And how do we fix some of the issues that need to be fixed? And how do we make the team better to be prepared for next season to not be in this spot?
Sabres general manager Kevin Adams. The Sabres wrap up the season tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. If the Sabres were to lose, they would go to the sixth draft selection. Before the lottery, at least, which is only a 1% difference. Also, there's no guy in this draft that's you could have four different guys at number one.
I think Misa, whoop-de-doo.
Misa is the name of the guy that might go one, or Higgins. There's a couple of them. So not worried about that at all. I guess if they lose, whatever. Right, we're not gonna be mad about it. You think?
No, like
unless they get blown out like 10-0 in their finale.
Well, I will be disappointed because, like, I just don't want to see them lose five in a row to end the year.
Because then that's losing streaks of 13, 6, and 5.
There is an argument though that this is not the worst thing in the world that this losing streak happened at the end, because they had won.
Yes,
they had won 8 of 9, and I think the last thing
lot of fears were like they're going to run it back.
Yeah, well, they're probably going to anyway. But the last thing you would want is them thinking that they solved it at the end.
Right.
That they fixed it at the end and that, oh, we don't need to change anything.
We don't need to do anything.
Right. They should try to fix anything. The reason they run it back isn't because, like, if they had won 12 of 14 to end the season, then I might have thought, okay, they're not going to change anything because they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Right now, I don't think they're going to change anything because they won't be able to do it.
I think they'll be able to do it. The thing is that, it for me, is I have faith in the moves if Kevin Adams makes them. The thing that I lack the faith of is if he will be able to do it. Whether it is ability or willingness, that is the problem. Now I'm looking at this as you cannot, for a third season in a row, sit on your hands. You can't.
Well, in what that can manifest itself in a couple of different ways. One way that I struggle with on that point of what to do is goaltender, because goalie is got to be the number one position that has to improve from this year to next year. And the reason I struggle with it is because I truly believe Devin Levi is going to be one of the best goalies in hockey. Like, all the signs point to that. Every step of his development is that of the top goalies in hockey. Like, his struggles in the NHL, that is not uncommon at all at age 22.
Yeah, no, not
23.
At all.
That happens all the time. But being this dominant in the AHL, after being that dominant in college, after being that dominant in the World Juniors, is very different than Lukanen. Lukanen, who had one good OHL year and then wasn't that great in the AHL and wasn't that great even before that in the ECHL and then wasn't that great at the start in the NHL. Like, there was no step of Lukanen's development where he's like, this dude is, you know, lighting the world on fire.
And then last year happened.
Last year happened. But that
goalies
could be,
are weird.
Goalies are weird, and sometimes they
right
have
at Owen when I say that
flash in the pan seasons, right? Levi, though, as someone that could be a year to year to year to year top level goalie, I see that potential in him, and that's where I struggle. I think that's in there. How long can I just wait around though for that?
Yeah, it's almost malpractice.
That can't be my plan, can it? Because I don't know how long it's going to take him. Ryan Miller didn't become their starting goalie until he was 25 years old. 26 even. Really. When's his birthday? His birthday is in July. Okay, so his age 25 season was 05-06.
Yeah.
That's when he becomes the starter. And for Levi, you know, he's 23. So next year 24, then 25. Do I have to wait 2 more years?
I think it all comes down to...
Some guys take longer than that. Olmark didn't become a starter until he was 26. I got to wait 3 years?
I think this comes down to Luukkonen necessarily, not Levi. And that is, what do you do?
Right.
I think that Levi next
year... Well,
there's
not much to do with Luukkonen, right?
I think that next year you're starting Levi in Rochester. It's the right thing to do. Even if he goes on an insane playoff run this year, I think you should start him there. And if he beats out whoever you acquire... That's fine.
But that's a good question. What have you acquired? Because if you've gone out and gotten something tangible, then I don't think there is a path for Levi to beat a guy out like that. If they go sign...
He could beat Luukkonen out.
Is Jake Allen a name here?
Jake Allen.
That's the name I keep thinking of.
Yes, Jake Allen's a name that I'm primarily thinking of in this aspect because he's playing significantly better this year. I think that he would be able to split time very favorably as well with Luukkonen, not making him have to play too many games. And you could probably split this thing about, like, what, 50-30?
But, like, Owen brings up a good name for this. Like, if they sign Jake Allen and Levi is dominant in the preseason and in training camp, what, after being dominant in the AHL playoffs, what do they do?
This is the issue with them.
Like, this is the issue. They put themselves in a really tough spot.
It's all centered around Luukkonen. Him blowing up this year on them has thrown a wrench into their whole timeline goaltending-wise. Because what they're hoping for was a Dustin Wolf situation in Calgary, right?
Right.
You look at that, and you've got Dustin Wolf, and he's really good coming up, right? He's really good in the WHL, really good in the AHL, wins AHL Player of the Year, I think twice.
Yeah.
They have Markstrom this whole time, and he's playing well. And that's where your transition comes, is you've got a guy that's in the NHL playing at a decent level. You don't need to find a new guy. And now once your young up-and-comer comes in and proves, okay, I can really do this, I can really take over the net here and carry this team, then you move off of your former starting goaltender. You know, Markstrom's always going to be a better version of whatever the Sabres were looking for there.
Mm-hmm.
But they were hoping for that situation with UPL, in my eyes. You have a guy that's a spot filler until your young goaltender that's a star can come in and prove, all right, now I can play 50, 55, 60 games in the league. You can't ask that of Levi next year. You just can't.
It's irresponsible.
Unless he – you can't – I would say you can't plan on that.
Exactly.
You can't put all your eggs in that basket. If it happens, and that's where – like maybe I'm too high on Levi. I think that's possible.
I think
it's possible Levi is so good next year that he ends up starting 50 games because you can't deny him the net.
I don't disagree with that. Look at what Wolf's done this year for Calgary.
That's what's happened there.
He has come in and played just as well as Markstrom ever did there. That team this year, that roster is no good. And they were an inch out of a playoff spot at the end of the year.
Right, and the plan for him at the beginning of the year probably was more like 30 games.
Exactly. And he came 55. Back. I heard him talk about this. He came back off the, not the All-Star break, the Four Nations break.
Yeah.
And Calgary was like, all right, you've been playing well. Now it's time for you to be the guy. Like, you're going to play every night. You're only going to get back-to-backs off for the rest of the year.
At this point, he was also giving them the best chance to win, and they were contending for a playoff spot.
Exactly. And that's what you hope for from Levi, but you cannot count on it. You can't.
You can't bank on that. No. And UPL, this is the real interesting thing about Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen at this point. Jake Allen is one of the names to bring up here. But I do think it is also, is there a trade route where Luukkonen can go to a team, be the guy that doesn't have Levi breathing down his neck?
Mm-hmm.
You can pitch to it. You can pitch to another team. He's still only going to be 26.
Right.
And then, A, you have your long-term path for Levi. You also upgrade in net based on the youth of Luukkonen. But the question is, who could you get?
Well, I'll point to...
That's the real challenge.
Yeah, you got to find a good name for that. And I'll point to the comparable that I had earlier this week, last week. Ottawa just did this. Ottawa, in a form of it. I mean, the difference is Korpisalo had only been in Ottawa for a year. Luukkonen has been a part of this organization now for, what was he drafted, 2017?
I think that's right.
Talking like 7 years, 8 years now. But Ottawa paid Jonas Korpisalo, away from L.A., for a big deal, 4 years, $20 million. And after 1 year of it going poorly, they said, yeah, we need to do better than this. They took him, they packaged him with a first-round pick, and they went and got a Linus Allmark.
And
they fixed their
answer?
Goaltending immediately. So Luukkonen signed 4 years, $23 million. The questions are, there's two questions, though. Can you find a Linus Allmark, who was a Vezina winner in Boston, and they knew he was the number one goalie when they acquired him? Can you find an Allmark comparable? And two, do you believe the Sabres are willing to trade or to give up on Lukanen like that 1 year after committing to him?
Yes, and here's why. It's Yusei Saros.
I love that name for this.
I love Yusei Saros. I think they're not going to want to block off Levi from getting this job.
See, that's a good question, too, because
Saros, though, is not going
to
be...
I want them to not be afraid of that.
Truly long-term at that point.
I want them to not be afraid of that because, actually... As we just look around the league for comparisons here, like how other teams have done this. Boston is not bad to look at, too. Boston, Jeremy Swayman was a very good goalie prospect. Like, same thing, like college hockey, like all coming up in his development, it was going really well. They signed Allmark, and they split the net for 4 years, and finally it was, okay, we think Swayman's ready to take over, so instead of him playing 38, 44 games, now we want him to have the net to himself. At that point, it's not really a problem that they had another goalie because the other goalie was good and he was valuable enough to fetch them a first. Right. Now, it didn't work for them because Swayman was terrible this year.
The only issue with Saros is his contract.
I don't love the contract.
It's not the cap hit. It is the length and the term. It expires in 2032-33.
Oh,
so yeah. It is a long time, which
that makes it very different than all.
Saros is 29. So I would say that doesn't block Levi's path. The contract does.
Well, it doesn't block him if you are willing to
move on
trade
after
him
a couple years.
After a couple years for something, if Levi's taken the net, but that might not be so easy. In 2 years he's got 6 years left at $7.7 million.
Exactly, and he's 31. And now goalies last longer. Granted, and you've seen guys that last longer, deeper into their careers, and play really well. Lundqvist and Holtby, yep. All those guys have played a long time. But
Thatcher Demko is my other answer for this as well. But I'm looking at teams that could use a little bit of a mix-up.
The Demko issue for me is you don't want to bank on that guy being healthy for a season for you. Mm-hmm. He's been made of glass. I mean, he's got that knee issue that never has even been seen before in the league. He's been in and out of the lineup all year for Vancouver. So in a year where you need that goaltender... If you're going to, either way, if you pair him with Levi and you want Levi at the start of the year and you're getting rid of UPL, you need a guy that's consistently there. If you're pairing him with UPL and Levi's in the AHL, then you also really need a guy because we saw this year that UPL doesn't have that consistency to him yet. If he comes back next year and proves it, great. But again, can't count on it. We're going on 15 next year if we miss.
Yeah.
Jake Allen's an easy one because of the fact that the only thing you have to contend for is money. You don't have to worry about a trade. But at the same time, that is coming with the understanding of, Levi, unless you beat out Lukanen in camp, you're in the AHL.
The Jake Allen idea to me is the way to go.
Sensible.
He's old enough that he's not going to be around for too long. You're not committing to any kind of contract with him. You sign him, you get him for, what do you want to do, 3 years?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you eat the last year of that. Okay, fine. And he's got a reputation of being a really smart, savvy veteran guy, perfect for Levi, really kind of shepherd him up into the potential that we need to see Levi reach.
Yeah.
To me, Allen is the answer here if you're looking to replace UPL or even if you're looking to go into next year with another partner for UPL.
I like that. I think as we...
Yeah, what could go wrong with an Allen in Buffalo?
Yeah. A Jay Allen. As we go to break here and get to Extendo, I like all of these ideas. The most likely scenario by far to me is that it's just Lukanen and Levi in goal to start next season. I think that is probably what happens. And to me, I think, even though I don't want them to bank on this, I think the most likely way that goalie gets them to the playoffs next year, if you told me, I played this game earlier, future me a year from now comes back in time and says, hey, they made the playoffs and goalie was a big reason why, I'm asking, that's because Levi did it, right? Levi did it. He finally realized the potential and all the signs we've seen in lower levels of hockey. He's arrived. That to me is how it would happen. The most likely way, at least. 803-0550, the phone number if you want to get a call in really quick. Jeff Stanhold will get to you super quick in Extendo Sports when we come back.
Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN with his weekly installment. Perhaps a tad early because we're off on Friday. Darren, welcome. Hi. Thank you for joining
us. How are you doing? Everybody good?
Good. I'm trying to figure out whether we go glass half full or half empty here, because for every great story of teams, you know, sneaking in like we saw last night, or you're going to have a team that misses. So then that can bring about some more critical assessment. Let's just go with what your hunch is for tonight in Carolina, Montreal. What are you anticipating?
That's a tough one. Well, my hunch overall is that Montreal gets in. And so they need 1 point, and that's not going to be easy against the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, I mean, all teams right now, especially the playoff teams like Carolina, are in that mindset. There's a certain way that you have to play. And with Rod Brind'Amour, that's non-negotiable. So they're going to be wired for sound, I would think, against the Montreal Canadiens. But there's also a part of me, and I think that we can all appreciate this from a world perspective, how great would it be to, you know, just boost the Columbus Blue Jackets into the playoff picture, you know, especially based on how the season, the year started with the nightmare of the loss of the Goudreau brothers. And just to see how Dean Evason and that group pulled together over the course of the year to get to this point is utterly remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's remarkable. So from a world hockey perspective, it would be a bigger, maybe a better story overall, of course, if it's Columbus. But there is something about this Montreal Canadiens team that deserves our respect. And, you know, I'm still a little bit skeptical over what the imminent influence of Demidov is going to be. You know, we saw a wonderful debut the other night. Terrific first period, you know, assist, follow up by a goal. But to expect that young man to consistently inject the offense needed to really truly help the Montreal Canadiens, I'm still a little bit unsure. I need a bigger sample size. But the Montreal Canadiens have had a heck of a run. So the Canadian story, the better story, of course, is Montreal, the NHL wanting that market in because it's a major market, but it does feel sort of like a storybook if Columbus is able to find a way.
So that is the, you know, eighth seed that's still waiting to be determined, Montreal or Columbus. Game tonight, game tomorrow. We'll see. Yeah. Maybe it ends tonight with Montreal getting a point. If they don't, then Columbus has a shot. In the Western Conference, the top seed, the Winnipeg Jets, are going to play the St. Louis Blues. Hellebuck Bennington, you know, like the Jim Montgomery coming back, and the Jets not able to get playoff success of late and losing to Colorado last year in a disastrous way.
Yeah.
Do you give the Jets like they're going to crush St. Louis, or is this going to be a tight matchup because of the way the Blues have been playing lately? And Jordan Binnington, big game Binnington, what he can do.
I think the latter. I think it's going to be a heck of a series. You know, good luck predicting this one. I do think Winnipeg is going to win the series, so there's my prediction. Whether they do it in six or seven, that's impossible to say, but I do think it'll be a lengthy series. Winnipeg has some adversity right now, though, right? You know, they've got Nikolaj Ehlers, who's out week to week. You know, that poor guy just can't stay healthy. You know, they've got some other pieces that are somewhat on the fence. Gabe Vilardi skated this week, but, you know, I expect that he'll play, but how influential can he be when he's, you know, maybe skating a couple of times before the start of game one of the opening round of the playoffs? But they have other pieces that are going to have to step up. Alex Iofalo has a new contract, so he's super motivated. You've got Cole Perfetti, who I think has had a real good year. So I'm talking a lot about Winnipeg, and when I look at the St. Louis Blues, I'm reminded of, again, maybe it's history repeating itself to a degree, but I'm reminded of the conversation I had in January where Doug Armstrong of the Blues was literally at that crossroads yet again with this club. What do? Do I start to try and transition on the fly by moving out some core pieces like Braden Schenn, other pieces that were in the wheel of speculation leading up to the trade deadline? And that was twofold. That was legit. That was real. I mean, he had a decision to make as general manager, but it was delivering a message to that team, the core of that team. You guys got to start playing better or you're going to leave me with no other option. And they responded in a huge, huge way. And then you had the Binnington factor of the Four Nations face-off and, you know, how well he played there and coming out of that. So I got all the time in the world for the St. Louis Blues. If St. Louis wins this series, I wouldn't call it an enormous upset. I mean, it may look like that, you know, given the fact you've got the President's Trophy, everything Winnipeg has accomplished this year. But that St. Louis team is a good team, and they're certainly well coached.
Well, the Blues have injury issues, too, with the absence of Holloway. And obviously, they've overcome a lot on the Blue. And I'm still going to say that I think the best in-season acquisition was Cam Fowler. I really do. I think
it's hard to argue. It's up
changed
there.
Everything for the Blues defense. Speaking of defense, with Owen Power going to New York tomorrow for more evaluation, do you have any insight into just, you know, kind of the latest on the Sabres, the, you know, the Josh Norris going into next year, Owen Power going into next year, just things you may have put together?
Well, you know, we did that game on TSN last night, and our buddy Mike Johnson put up a graphic just looking at all the point getters and the good seasons that several of the Buffalo Sabres players enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And yet here we are. We're talking about another fruitless season for the Sabres in terms of playoff hockey. So I wouldn't say there's much on the injury front. Josh Norris, I don't think that was much of a surprise. I think that for the most part, the Sabres knew what they were getting in Josh Norris. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not the same shoulder-related problems, you know, that he's had historically. So there's some good news in just being able to say that. But they knew that it's more about longer term, the fit of Josh Norris in Buffalo. And they got some other good pieces, you know, included Bernard Docker, I thought was pretty good for the Sabres last night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Owen Power, again, not much there. But I'm curious, you know, when you go into the offseason as a non-playoff team, and especially a team like Buffalo that's been through so much for so long, the easy prediction is it's not bold. Well, there's got to be change. Okay, great. Thanks, Tips. Well, what does that change look like? And that's where it gets real challenging for me. You know, my understanding is that management still has the support of ownership, right? I got a hard time believing that there'd be another coaching change. I mean, you do need that layer of consistency in your front office, you know, because otherwise you get panicked throughout the hockey operations and the organization in general. So now we're talking one more time about the roster. And Kevin Adams was open to making big deals at the trade deadline, and he made a big deal at the trade deadline. How open is he to changing that roster again in the offseason? That's what we're going to find out. You know, is Jack Quinn legitimately going to be in play? Speculation around Paterka. Go down the list. Maybe one of the big defensemen. Mm-hmm. You know, something has to change the future of the Buffalo Sabres. So I think this is another important offseason for Adams.
Okay, so this afternoon started the show, I talked about bolstering the blue line. Like the forwards you just mentioned, Thompson, Tuck, Paterka, McLeod, Zucker, like they all have great numbers and, you know, some of their best, and it's good. Dahlin's having a great year, and Byron's having a really good year, offensive year, and bolstering the blue line other ways. I'm looking at the UFA market, and a player like Aaron Ekblad will be a UFA. Right shot D, 29. You know, is he young? No, but you don't have to bring in a 24-year-old. That's not what you look.
No.
Do you think a player like Aaron Ekblad, number one, would be available on July 1, or is that a Florida, you know, we move on with him? Because then there's also the Bennett situation in Florida, but would an Aaron Ekblad be a guy that you think would come in and solidify your blue line, especially on the right side?
Yeah, I mean, he would definitely help, and he'd help in a number of different ways. I still think that there's lots of mileage left in Aaron Ekblad, right? And the fact that he's had to serve a 20-game suspension, you know, his body is going to be more rested than any player going into the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, there's only so much money, and you can only slice the salary cap pie so thin. And we know that the cap is going up next year. But I also know that they've invested in certain pieces and elements, right? Mm-hmm. And they left two guys more or less unprotected, and that is Sam Bennett and that is Aaron Ekblad. They're not going to be able to sign both those guys. You know, there's other areas of need and concern and attention as required by Billy Zito. I think that Bennett goes to the open market because I don't think Florida can afford to pay what he's going to command. You know, when you look at that unrestricted free agent pool, it's not very deep, is it, with top UFAs? Mm-hmm. And I mean, with all due respect to Sam Bennett, there wouldn't be many teams that wouldn't like Sam Bennett on their team. But are we prepared to call him a superstar? I'm not. I mean, he's a really good player. He's a really good player. That's but exactly I don't think he's a superstar.
It's going to be an overpay. Some teams are going
You're right. We always remember we have an avoidance. We try to avoid the word great.
Yeah.
Bennett is not a great player. He's a very good player.
100% agree. Very effective,
this, that,
but
the
is
other
he
thing?
An $8 million player? That's the thing, right?
I think he's north of that. I think this guy's getting
the market will bear north of that. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I do. I do. And I think I look at, okay, there's the uncertainty what Toronto's going to do with Mitch Marner, you know, other pieces, John Tavares, who, in my opinion, his stock has gone up. I mean, he wants to stay in Toronto, but his stock has gone up. So there'll be a negotiation there. You know, the Detroit Red Wings, not to get off track away from Buffalo and Ekblad and all that, but the Detroit Red Wings are a team that, I mean, they've missed the playoffs for 9 straight years. They're feeling it too there, right? Mm-hmm. They've got a real anxious fan base. They've got an anxious ownership group there, but they have cap space and they have money and they have the interest in doling out the big bucks. If a guy like Marner were to hit the open market, I think Detroit tries to take a big swing there. Or a Sam Bennett, right? So that's the market that we're generating. So Florida can't keep all those guys. So if they know that Bennett's going to the open market and they can't afford to keep him, then maybe they throw a little bit more Ekblad's way to keep him.
So if you're saying Bennett is north of $8 million on the open market, I mean, what does that mean for Marner? 16? Like, seriously, like, is somebody going to throw 15, 16 million at Mitch Marner in the open market? Because he just hit 100 points. And, you know, those players don't grow on threes, obviously. So are you, like, in Toronto, it's probably 12 and a half to 13, but open market.
No, it's higher than that in Toronto, man.
You think it's higher?
I think Toronto would go 13 and a quarter. Maybe they're pushed to 13 and a half. And that's just my, I know they'd go to 13 and a quarter. So if you're at 13.25, like, come on, you know, you go to 13 and a half if that's what it's going to take. I think it's just going to come down to a lifestyle issue for Marner. You know, the fishbowl isn't for everybody, even though, you know, born and raised Toronto area guy, all of that, you know, his wife is expecting, you know, does he want to raise his family in a fishbowl? And he's at a place now where he can perhaps dictate what his future looks like, not just financially, but, you know, does he go to another? There's going to be a flood of interest in Mitch Marner. Is it going to get to 15, 16? Probably not, because unless he goes to a team that is going to win anytime soon, like, right?
Chicago?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can come up with a list. But
we have no time for lists. We have to go.
this went from Buffalo to Toronto pretty quickly, didn't it? It's amazing how that works.
Quicker than a trip on the QEW. Yes. Dregs, thank you.
Okay, guys, thank you.
Back after this on Sabres Live.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, Mr. Bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Well, it's not like we're not going to hear from Paul after today, but it's always, I guess, sad day in Buffalo when you realize the hockey season's come to an end, and we've been here way too many times before. It is the end of the season, the final game for the Buffalo Sabres after an 82-game season. They play the Philadelphia Flyers tonight at home. Puck drops at 7, pregame here at 6 on WGR. And, of course, you can follow Paul as you have all season long and continue to do so at PHAM1717 at WGR550.com. He joins me now on the West Hur Hotline. Paul, give me one word or phrase to sum up this Sabres season for you.
Underachieve. Simple as that. You know, even what they're doing now, they went on like a 6 or 7 week where they're winning hockey games. They're playing the game the right way. If they had a blip along the way, the next game they were fine. It looked like they had turned a bit of a corner as a team. And now all of a sudden, here we are at a 4-game losing streak. Poor Lindy Ruff. He's been on win number 899 now for four games. And, you know, I'm sure the team is hoping they could get him number 900 before this season ends tonight. So, you know, he's been sitting on that one. But it just, you know what these four games have shown is there's still a lot of work to be done. Have they made some progress? Yes, I think they have. I'm not trying to say that those 6 or 7 weeks don't matter. I think they do. I think they proved to themselves that they can be a pretty darn good team when they put their mind to playing the game the right way and playing the way Lindy Ruff wants them to be. But the last four games have shown they're not there yet. You know, there's still work to be done. They're still not a good team because these things keep happening. Jason Zucker was beside himself the other night talking about it. He goes, yeah, we played 50 minutes. So what? The game's 60 minutes. And we got to learn how to stop doing this. We got to learn how to stop winning five in a row, then losing four in a row. He goes, it's been what we've been doing all year. And he goes, this has to stop. And we have to learn that, you know, how to get over this and get by this. And he's right.
And it just, though, when he says that, I hear another guy who, well, it's not on him for the last 14 years, but he's also part of this group. And it's all that same spin cycle we get into, Paul, which is, everybody saying the same thing every year, and then new group comes in and they say it, and how do you fix it? I'm not really sure. How much different, and we don't have to get into specifics here, but do you really expect like any big overhaul of this roster, like maybe a major player getting shifted and maybe being out or a major player coming in? Do you think that it's just a few minor tweaks here and there? I mean, I don't know what they can do given the restraints of no movement clauses and things like that too.
For 2 years now or more, you know, they've been trying to, you know, find a guy to play with Owen Power, a veteran guy who has his back in all situations, takes care of him, and lets him go and do his thing. And to get a veteran like Tuck, like Zucker, to play in the top six. They've got those guys, but they need more. This team is just too many young players who are up and down and up and down, and they counted, you know, they miscalculated. They gave guys contracts that probably shouldn't have gotten them when they got them, some of them. And they've learned their lesson. They had four or five guys they could have given contracts to the last offseason. None of them got them. So I think they figured out that maybe we jumped the gun here on a couple of guys and we probably shouldn't have. They were, you know, guys weren't even getting 100 games in the American Hockey League except for Kulik. I mean, they just weren't developing collectively. There was just a rush to get them up here because, well, it's been 12 years. Well, now it's been 13, and now it's been 14, and we got to stop this, and we got to, you know, develop our players quickly, and it's blown up in their face. So, you know, they have to get some veteran guys. This team has to stop being the youngest team in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Even though they've played a lot of games, they've got to get some veterans in here who can play hockey, who are good hockey players that can help them get over these types of humps, who can help them make sure they don't lose 13 in a row or have a 13-game winless streak, however you want to call it. I mean, 13 games, less than a month, blew their season up. They go from third place in the division, 2 points out of second, to last in the conference in less than 4 weeks. And that's crazy. That is just crazy that something like that would happen. And it's crazy you had a GM that froze, that did absolutely nothing during those 13 games. And as said, that maybe he was wrong there. Maybe he should have. You know, now, so he's doubting himself. And a GM who has watched his team digress instead of progress is going to get a sixth year. And that I don't understand either.
Are you confident in that, Paul?
I'm pretty sure, yeah. Terry Pegula, he changes his mind at the snap of fingers. And Jason Botterill is a perfect example. Nobody thought he was going to be let go, especially after Kim Pegula came out and said, you know, we know things that you don't know about Jason Botterill, and, you know, gave him a vote of confidence that he was staying, and less than a month later he was gone, with Terry coming out and saying, which, by the way, is the last time he spoke to the hockey media, came out saying we feel we're not being heard, and that was the end of Jason Botterill. So things can always change in his mind. He's that way, but as of today, I do not think he's planning on changing either the coach or the general manager.
So you and I have always been on the same wavelength of, okay, who cares? It's not about draft picks and all that. But I do want to point out that because of what you said about they don't need to get younger, they're going to pick either 6th, 7th, or 8th, it looks like, if my math is correct. If they lose tonight, it could be 6th. If they win tonight, it could be 8th. Either way, let's just say they're 7th. I'm all aboard, Paul. What you just said is right. I don't care. Just trade the damn pick and get some players in here, right? I mean, like, what else do they don't need to keep stockpiling young draft picks here.
Absolutely. And I understand it takes two to trade. I get it. I get it's hard. I get there are restrictions. I know people talk about the palm trees. Well, the restrictions are real. What it is people don't want to come to a team that hasn't made the playoffs 14 years in a row. That's what it is.
Right.
When Breer and Drury were here, they had no trouble getting players here. The Buffalo Bills, now that they have Josh Allen and a winning and Sean McDermott here, they don't have trouble getting players. When they hadn't been in the playoffs for 17 years, well, I'm sure players didn't want to come here either. So that's
right,
the
Paul. Can I just say, and I think you'll agree with me when I say this. Is it fair to say Kevin Adams may have said it wrong and it came out wrong and it didn't sound good? We all know that, and he deserves kind of criticism for that and saying it. He wasn't totally wrong what he was trying to say.
No, he wasn't wrong.
What he's trying to say is, listen, you got to give them a reason to come here, because otherwise, why would you come to a place where there are higher taxes? You can live in warmer weather. You win, that's the reason you would want to come here then, and then it takes care of everything else.
And if you do win, they will want to come here, and that's the key to the whole thing. But it's still, I know it's hard, but it's still his job. It's his job to get these trades done, and he's had a couple of years to get these bigger trades done. And it's all also he's made some good trades. It's not all bad. McLeod was a good trade.
Yeah.
Getting Alex Tuch here. You know, doing the best he could in the Reinhardt and Eichel trades. You know, those aren't easy trades when you have star players who say, "I don't want to be here anymore." Well,
I don't think Byram's a bad deal with Mittelstadt. Yeah,
Byram is a great deal for them. Yeah. So it's not like everything is bad. I think it's more of the fact is he didn't get the whole thing done. He got part of the job done. Were they harder to play against with Malenstein? Yes. Lafferty didn't work out the way I thought it would. Malenstein has. McLeod has. Signing Jason Zucker has worked out. I think the Greenway deal or trade has worked out. Greenway brings things to the team when he's healthy, and that's key. That other players don't. His anticipation to forcing turnovers and those types of things is something that he does very well. But I think the whole key to the thing is he didn't go far enough. You know, he talked about, you know, he was willing to trade that pick last year. And it was like, well, we kind of almost had a deal, but the other team wouldn't trade him. And he said, and that player hasn't been traded. Guess what? That player's been traded. You know, at the time he said it, he hadn't been. But later in the year, he was traded to the Colorado Avalanche. So things can change. And that's the thing. You got to find a way to get it done, even when it's hard.
Paul's appearances here on WGR, as always, are brought to you by... I got to grab it right here. There you go. Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Okay, Paul, what is the situation short and, well, I guess it doesn't matter now. Short term, there's one game. But really long term here, what do we know or think we know about Owen Power?
Kevin Adams told Shope and the Bulldog that I believe he's in New York today getting another opinion. So maybe we'll know more when Adam speaks on Saturday about what, you know, where that's going to be headed and what kind of rehab is going to be in on that. So, you know, he's busy doing that today. I would tend to doubt we'll get a chance to talk to him on locker cleanout. I don't know that for sure. But as I said, we get to talk to Adams. And by the way, we will have local programming on WGR Saturday. Kevin Adams will probably speak somewhere between 4 and 5:30, I would think. What the holdup is you know, they're interviewing players, the coach and the general manager. They don't know how long they're going to be talking to players. It could be an hour. Mm-hmm. It could be 5 minutes. So, you know, they're hoping to have Kevin Adams with us by 4:30, but you just never know. But we will have local programming on, and we will be bringing everybody those interviews on Saturday later, because usually Sports Talk Saturday ends at 2 o'clock. It will end after Lindy Ruff and Kevin Adams speak, which again might be 4:30, 5 o'clock, somewhere in there.
Okay, but are we? Is it a possibility this could be into next year? This kind of injury, whatever he has.
Kevin told Shoup and the Bulldog that he should be ready to play next year. He should be ready for when the season starts. So that was his comment on that. It sounds like, you know, Josh Norris, if this was a playoff game today, mm-hmm. would be playing. Mm-hmm. Lindy Ruff said he's feeling much better, but he's not playing. He said that last game. Meaning, why do it? Why chance it? You know, he's feeling better. What's the point of putting him out there for a game or two and chancing it? Let's just start fresh next year. That's what I took out of that.
I agree with you. It feels to me like both Norris and Greenway were kind of just shut down for the year for that same reason, right?
They ran out of games. I mean, if there were still 3 weeks left in the season, I think Josh Norris would be out there. But with just a game or two, I just think they looked at what is the point? Let's just start fresh next year.
Want to ask you about Lindy Ruff before we go. You've known Lindy a long time. And, you know, you covered him here in Buffalo. I mean, we both watched him play here in Buffalo. You covered him as a player. You covered him as a coach. He comes back. And he said, and he was pretty direct when he was asked the other day. He said, I'm disappointed. I mean, in the season, the result of the season, I'm disappointed. There was a thought that maybe he'd get this team to the playoffs and walk away into the sunset or maybe go into a different role. I know we've talked, Paul, about the fact that it feels pretty clearly here now that he's coming back. Just give me a sense of what you think about Lindy as a person and competitor and where his mind is right now with everything.
And Kevin Adams did say the other day that Lindy Ruff is coming back. So,
okay, thank you.
He was very definitive in that. But, yeah, Lindy is extremely upset he hasn't fixed this yet. Or it took too long, you know, where they started playing. Mm-hmm. It was too late in the season for it to matter. And that really upsets him, and I think it really drives him. I wasn't sure until the last couple times I've heard him talk about it. And he talks about it almost with venom in his voice. Like, I did not get this team where it needs to be, and it's unfinished business. And I know he wants to provide this area. This is his home. And it's been his home even as coach of the Stars and coach of the Devils. And he wants to bring a winner to this city. And it really upsets him that this year went the way it did. And so I think he definitely wants to be back, and Kevin Adams did say he would be back.
All right, Paul. Iowa State. Who's the guy that looked like Iowa State? There was a guy I looked at Iowa State the other day. I'm like, you know, oh, Jaden Higgins? What do you mean by him? You got Jaden Higgins, wide receiver.
Great.
Yeah, you like him, right?
Yeah, he's always open, and when he's not, he still makes a play for you. He really competes for the ball. So, Rocco Becht knew he could throw it near the end zone or if he needed a first down. Even if Higgins was covered, he's big enough that he could get the ball to him. He's not like a speedster, but he can get open like on patterns downfield. You know, all of a sudden, you're thinking, boy, he can't fly, but look at He shook his man, and he's open. It just seemed like he was always there for him. That would be a guy I definitely would, I think is going to be a good NFL player and somebody I think the Bills should be interested in now. And, of course, the corner that
Darian Porter. That's my next one. I love Darian Porter. I think Darian Porter fits everything for the Bills. Checks all the boxes. 6'3", runs sub 4.440. Really good athlete. I think that's a kid that if the Bills were to draft Darian Porter in round two, I'd be really happy with that.
And teams used to look away from him when he was out there a lot.
Yeah. Love it. All right, Paul. Well, I'll let you get back to work. All right, what is the schedule? Tomorrow, right away, locker clean-out? Is that how this works?
Yeah, about 10 o'clock we'll get started, and we're just in the room the whole time. And just so people know, I'm going to try to get some interviews to you guys as quickly as I can while you're on the air before noon. So hopefully you'll be able to get some guys on talking at locker clean-out tomorrow.
All right, Paul. Thanks for all your outstanding coverage all year, but we'll talk again. Thanks for today.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, Paul Hamilton right there. Yeah, Sabres wrap it up tonight. Hard to believe. I remember, you know, opening season. Here we go. Lindy, let's go. But that was out in Europe, right, when they played and didn't go very well. First two games. They come back. They play a good game at home but lose and score one goal. And then, you know, first three games, one goal, one goal, one goal, I think, each of the first three, right, if I remember correctly, New Jersey, L.A. And then they won a couple of games, started to feel a little bit better, or at least, you know, one to bounce back a little bit, and then it just never got on track the way it should have. And as Lindy said, and as Paul said about what Lindy thinks, it just He never could fix it on time, and he's upset about that, and he's disappointed, and everybody's disappointed. Another year. Here we go, right? So we'll see what happens, but immediate stuff is tonight. Game against the Flyers. You wrap it up. It's fan appreciation night tonight. And then, of course, locker clean out tomorrow. And then they look forward to free agency and the draft. We will take a timeout. We are looking forward to the draft, the NFL draft, that is, 1 week from tonight. Josh Reed, WIVB-TV Channel 4 Sports Director, joins me at 11 a.m. here after this quick segment when we come back on WGR.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
The focus is on trying to just win a hockey game. Nothing more. Be a good pro and win a hockey game.
Welcome in. It's Sabres Live, and it's the final day of the regular season with Marty. I'm Brian. And Marty, your thoughts heading in with James Reimer getting the call tonight?
I'm surprised. And that was exactly where I thought we weren't going to go to start the show, because I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to see probably Luukkonen one more time. And after what I thought was a good game from the netminder on Tuesday against the Leafs. And so it looks like James Reimer will be in net tonight, because he was in the starter's net this morning. So no Beck Malenstein at the morning skate. So everything else was the same. But I'm surprised. There's a couple of ways to look at it. One is, it's not a throwaway game. It's not just a whatever, you know, last game of the season, I get it. But you play that game the same way. You prepare the same way. You go through your progression, your practice. What do you want to see from anybody? So if there was five more games left in the year, would tonight be a James Reimer game? Would you go Luukkonen again? I probably would have gone Luukkonen again, but that's just, you know, the conversation internally is probably different in that way. So, but you got to play the game just like it is not the last game of the season. You got to prepare like it's not the last game of the season, and you got to go out there and be a pro and get it done.
What does that mean? It is the last game of the season. Why would you prepare that it's not?
Well, okay. Well, some people would say it doesn't matter. It's the last game. Who cares? Well, you still do your homework. You still have your power play meeting. You still have your penalty kill meeting. You know, you and I are still going to do our homework. I still look at it. The Flyers are 5-2-1 in their last eight. That was after a, you know, John Tortorella firing, and you know, Fedotov is in net for them. Well, he's had some tough times. You know, so you're doing your homework to prepare like it's not just a throwaway game. That's the way I mean it. I get that the schedule says game 82, it's the last game. But that's after the game. That's after, when you're taking your gear off and you don't have on the board bus at 10 o'clock or practice at 10 o'clock tomorrow. Right now, it's just like game 32 or game 2. That's the way you got to prepare.
I'll go back to the first talking point. What does it mean that Reimer is starting tonight, in your opinion?
My first thought is, well, did something happen to Luukkonen in the game that he's not 100% healthy to play? Because we saw him taking a couple of high shots, a couple of shots in the head. he had a couple of scramble plays where he had to stretch out. And so that's my first thought, is that they played Tuesday. They didn't have a practice on Wednesday. Maybe there's some lingering issue or something to that effect. That would be my first thought. And look, we don't know. We won't know until, you know, later, or, you know, if that is being brought up, but that would be my first thought.
Nothing more than that, then.
I don't think so. I mean, like, I can't see.
I just think that's what, you know why I'm asking this. I mean, James has played the bulk of the games here down the stretch, and Luukkonen's the one under contract. That's all.
Yeah, and that's the reason is like, you think about it, and that would be my first thought. The second, there's not even a second thought. The second thought would be, why is Luukkonen not being played against? You know, he played against Toronto. You play him again on Thursday, unless there was, you know, something else that is like, hey, don't like the way you practice, don't like the way you maybe missed me. I don't know. I have no idea. The only thing that comes to mind is maybe there's a little something that he's not 100%, and they're like, we don't need to push it and make it even worse. This is this is maybe the only reason why you say that's the last game of the year, because you're like, we don't need to push it. But that's the only thing I can see right now.
All right. Well, under the assumption that he has played his final game this season, then what is the takeaway of Lukanen's season?
Well, the takeaway, I think he said it after Toronto, some to the effect that he has to be better. And I think that it comes down to that. It comes down to, can you manage the rough moments? Right? Everybody's talking about the 13-game losing streak. Well, Lukanen lost 9 of those. Can you manage the rough moments? I was looking at, because Montreal clinched a playoff spot last night, I'm looking at what were the standings on December 1st. Montreal was 5 points back of Buffalo. Ottawa was actually 2 points back of Buffalo. And that's the month that you had that streak and carried on. And so how do you manage the bad moment? And that is something that Lukanen and the Sabres failed to do this year. But since we're talking about Lukanen, that can you win a game with your B game? Can you win a game with your C game sometimes? Because that's what you need to be able to do. And Lukanen was not able to do that this year. He was able to win games with his A game, and he actually lost some games with his A game at times. So that is, you got to be able to flip that. And I think December was a very, very bad stretch for the team, but for Lukanen, and he never recovered from that. Last year, we saw him second half of the year, you know, top 2 in goal save above expectation, and, you know, the numbers were unbelievable. Well, he never had to deal with some of the losing streak. Everything was kind of consistent and steady, and he felt really good. He won some games with his B game. He won some games with his C game. This year, he wasn't able to get that done, and that's the takeaway, is that how do you look into next year? And if you're going to be the guy and you're going to be the number one goalie going into next year, how do you manage when you don't have your A game to be able to still win games?
I didn't look this up, so I apologize in advance, but did you have a point in your career where you had as sustained successful run as Lukanen did last year and then have a follow-up like this year?
Yeah, so I think my biggest from 1 year to the next was my first year with the Flyers. I have 30 plus wins, make the playoffs, go to the conference finals. And then the next year we started the year and it was a rough start. And it was a rough start personally. It was a rough start as a team. Looking back on it, okay, I think we all felt like, oh, this is great. We're on a high run. And I don't know that the same commitment in the offseason to prepare and to be ready was done. It was the same year that they named Mike Richards the captain and they gave him the long-term contract and they gave Jeff Carter the contract and they gave Braden Coburn the contract and Randy Jones. And it was like, everybody's getting paid. Everybody. And it's human nature, maybe to a certain extent. But we did not, and I know, I did not prepare as well for the next year because everything seemed to be going well. Now, did I recover in season? Absolutely. Did we make the playoffs? Yes. Did a lot of those guys recover in season? Yes. We had a bad start, but we were able to recover. I don't think Lukanen was able to recover this year. And if you say, okay, well, what does that mean for Thompson, who's got paid, and Dahlin, who's got paid, and they all performed good this year. Yeah, did the team had some slower moments and losing streak? Yes. But overall, you can't say that the 13-gamer is on Thompson's shoulders or on, well, Dahlin was, you know, starting game 4. I think he missed most of them. So you can't put that on pretty much anybody else here. And I'm not saying I'm putting it on Lukanen just for him. It's the team. But he's the one that at some point needed to have that performance to say, I'm stopping it. I'm going to stop it. I'm going to put up the wall. I'm going to do it for a week. We're going to get back into winning ways. That's how I felt like I flipped my second year in Philadelphia and I got to where I wanted to go. And a lot of people did. That just wasn't done, this year in that way.
A lot of different ways to go here. You were obviously way, way, way further along in your career when you're citing this example.
Yes. Right?
And
yes, and, but it was really my it was my second year as a reborn number one, because I had a little bit of, right, you know, being a number one, but then it was like, oh, sorry, Marty, you're the backup. And I was a backup year after, and now all of a sudden I have to relearn to deal with being the number one. Mm-hmm. And I did it my first year, but it was no pressure at all. You know, like, we were last in the league that year before the Flyers. We come in, we're first in our division at the All-Star break. And then mm-hmm. we had a 10-game losing streak. And I remember yeah. that was telling. How do you come out of a 10-game losing streak? And we actually broke that streak here in Buffalo with the Flyers. And then we made the playoffs and, you know, got ourselves going. So I think there's some learning in this season. But so, again, not having Luukkonen played this last game kind of is like, okay, is the learning complete? I don't think so. Is the learning got to go into next year? I don't know. That puts a lot of question marks.
Yeah, and I think, well, there's, again, many things to take from that. You mentioned the 10-game losing streak that you overcame and made the playoffs, and that's why I don't like to focus strictly on the 13-game winless streak this year, because as much as you wanted to excuse Darlene's absence for a large portion of that, Darlene Thompson Tuck and the entire company were part of all the other 5-6 game winless streaks that ultimately add up to, you know, where they are today, right? So then how do you measure those moments as far as takeaways of, you know, whatever you want to call it, improving, building upon, changing, moving forward? How do these top core players prevent these other losing streaks? Because it was not just one. It's never just one moment of the season. And even, unfortunately, since the Four Nations and a prolonged winning streak of 7 games at home prior to losing last night, they're basically a game over 500 since the Four Nations.
Yeah, so, which is...
And a game over 500 from that length of time is only going to put you at 3 or 4 or 5, maybe, games over 500 for the year, which is not going to get you to the playoffs.
It gets you to 85 points. 85 points is not going to get you to the playoffs. Look, Montreal made it with 91. 90 is always the very minimum that you have to kind of look for. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, in the Western Conference, 91 wouldn't have made the playoffs. So in the Western Conference, you're looking at 96. The Flames at 94 with a game left didn't make it. Mm-hmm. They can get to 96. They won't get in. So, and we remember it was like 4 years ago, or maybe the year before the pandemic.
100 points.
Everybody got 100 points in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. So, you know, that's why I look at, you're right, because I can't just put it all on goaltending. I can't put it all on.
Yeah, you can't put it on one 13-game segment. There's more to it than that. One 13-game
segment.
Yeah.
But that really hurts when you have that. So you have to overcome that even more. Mm-hmm. But when you add 2 or 3 segments, and it comes down to probably the same thing. It comes down to, are you playing well defensively because you have the talent to be able to score? Are you getting saves? And we saw that when Reimer started to win. You're like, oh, I don't think that Reimer was being Dominik Hasek in net, but he was giving solid performances, and then mm-hmm. all of a sudden, oh, we're winning one, we're winning two, we're winning three. We won 6 in a row at home. Like, that's basically the bottom line, I think, when you look at the season. Is it more complicated than that? Absolutely. But that's where you gotta figure it out, because Ottawa got into the playoffs, added Allmark. We talked about this. Montreal, Montembeau played a lot better. And really, Columbus got a last season push because Jet Greaves was playing really good. Mm-hmm. If you look at Merzlikins and Tarasov before that, you're like, eh, it wasn't great.
Yeah, so, but they were still in the hunt, and they were actually in position more often than not throughout the year compared to, you know, the month of March when it derailed. So they overcame inconsistent goaltending. They really did, because they were a very good offensive team and they had a Norris Trophy candidate. See, this sounds very similar. Like the Sabres had an offensive team, just like Columbus. Norris Trophy type player, Werenski, mm-hmm. Dahlin. Like there's some lot of similarities here. But Columbus was quite a ways ahead of Buffalo in all of this.
Yeah, but at the end of the year, Columbus may end up at 87, 88, or 89 points, which is like, it's not enough. We said bare minimum is 90.
Right.
So what's Columbus' focal point going into next year?
2.5 times as many injuries as Buffalo, just for an example. That's...
Yeah, but I mean, right? What's the focal point for Columbus next year? If you're saying, oh, Columbus will make the playoff next year if blank.
Jet Greaves is the starter.
If Jed Greaves played the way he played at the end of the season.
Right.
If they get goaltending.
But there's no guarantee he's going to be that from the outset next year.
No, so if you're Columbus, what do you have to do? You have to think, well, Jed Greaves may be the guy, but you have to surround him. You have to help him.
Their roster's pretty good, and they got huge, huge, huge jumps from their youngest players this year. That's the biggest difference, presumably. Adam Fantilli,
Kent
Johnson, yeah. Just to name two. But, you know, those are enormous steps for them organizationally, with Marchenko emerging as a superstar. Relatively speaking, it's 1 year, I get it. But he's put himself into that point per game player conversation. So when you take it back to Buffalo then, which players would need to be that much better? And as opposed to just saying everyone, we all understand that. But just to contrast it, like, you know, because we're talking about Columbus here, yeah. But it doesn't have to be that. Like, where do the next biggest gains have to come from?
Well, I think the easy answer would be Jack Quinn, because for me, if you have Thompson and you have Norris back in the lineup and... you know, Tuck plays the same way that he does or did. Zucker and McLeod play the same way. Paterka plays the same way. I think your one hole in the top nine is to say, we need Jack Quinn to be to the next level. We need Jack Quinn to be 25 goals, you know, 55 to 60 points, a power play contributor. Like, that's where it would be. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think... offensively, seasons are going to fluctuate. Some guys are going to have better number than the year before. Some guys are going to drop a little bit. Some mm-hmm. guys are going to drop a lot more. You don't want to, I don't anticipate a big drop in Tuck, in Thompson, in Paterka. McLeod had a great year this year. Even if it drops a little bit next year, does it move the needle so much? No, it doesn't. And Zucker, great year this year. Same thing for him. But I think Jack Quinn is a guy that can help move the needle, because he has a much higher ceiling than McLeod and Zucker in the production offensively that he can bring. So that's why I would say him. You know, I'm not going to look at Zach Benson and say, Zach Benson, in my opinion, is not a 60-point guy. He doesn't move the needle that way. Peyton Krebs doesn't move the needle that way. And maybe the way to look at it in the offseason is the guys that don't move the needle that way, maybe that there's a reason. You know, the guys that move the needle, they're the guys that have to continue to, you know, move forward. And that's, you know, Dahlin moves the needle. I think Byron moved the needle this year. But Owen didn't. So is Owen a guy that now all of a sudden has to move the needle? Or is he never going to be that guy? So that's what you have to have the conversation internally and make the decision on some of those players, who's moving the needle and who isn't.
Power, of course, getting second opinion on his injury today. Interesting phrasing there, just because obviously he had a career year offensively, but you chose to phrase his season the way you just did.
Which guy?
Power.
Owen? Yeah. Well, the offense is nice. The offense is nice, but what we've seen now often is that there needs to be more on the defensive side. There needs to be a bigger ownership of defending, of being strong in front of the net, or mm-hmm. of like asserting your physicality. And that's why I think Dahlin did that at one point, where you're like, okay, there's more there, you know, in all aspects of the game. There's still the offense. Now, Bo Byram, to me, is not the same guy. I can't ask Bo Byram to be this physical, you know, strong defensive defenseman with his size. I think what we're seeing of Bo Byram is, can he have puck possession? Yes. Can he skate? Can he make first passes? Can he bring offense? 100%. But you got to look at the tools that everybody has and how that moves the needle. And so even though power has, you know, the points and the offense that you could say, oh, great year on paper, there's tools and a part of his game that is not being, you know, dominant, that is not reflecting on paper, that actually is a negative, and that has to turn the other way.
Obviously in any situation, but especially at times like this, the conversation turns to leadership. It was Rasmus Dahlin's first year as captain, but Alex Tuck almost always feels like the elder statesman of this group. And it wouldn't matter whether he was actually 24 or 34. I just feel like that's how Tuck kind of carries himself. Like, he's got this presence about him as a bit of a leader of this group.
I think he's sometimes 22 and sometimes 42. That's what he does. He fluctuates between.
He's the Rico Award winner again here this year. So just based on his season, his off ice, his place within this roster and this organization and his contractual status heading into the summer, like, how do you look at Alex Tuck, and how do you think Alex Tuck looks at all of this?
Well, I think Alex Tuck is looking at, I mean, anybody can look at it many different ways. But I think Alex Tuck is looking at, okay, this season I didn't really get to play a ton with Thompson. I played a little bit in a different spot. I was a penalty kill guy. The power play points weren't all there. But I think that there was a huge impact by Alex Tuck on the ice in the way that individually he played. And there's a huge impact off the ice and leadership-wise. And, yeah, I mean, nobody wants to say I'm a leader when you lose 13 in a row and then you lose another 6 in a row. Like, I should be one that's going to stop it. But I think there's more factors, again, that come into play. Do I think Rasmus Dahlin was a good leader this year in his first year as a captain? I think I saw a lot of really good things. I think there's still some development that needs to be done, but I saw a lot of good things. And I think what we've seen out of Alex Tuck as a leader is really good. Early in the season, I questioned, is Alex Tuck going to be the type of player that is going to work well with Lindy Ruff? Because Lindy likes to just push a little bit and lean, and it's demanding, right? And Tuck had done so well with Don Granato that I wasn't sure how that was going to respond. And I think Alex showed, you know, tons of maturity and leadership in the way that he played under a different coach, under a different kind of approach. And to me, that's leadership. Now, everybody's got to join in, and not everybody got to figure it out. But that's, you know, I have no problem about, you know, Tuck's leadership. And I think, obviously, we talked about it, this summer would be a very, very important time, in my opinion, to look at Alex Tuck and his extension. You can push it down the road. You can kick it down the road because I think you're still, but doing it this summer would be good.
Do you, in your mind, have an idea of who the best fit with him as a centerman is?
Well, it depends what you want to do.
And I only ask it because now it's Thompson and Tuck on the same side, and that's not how we started the year. So it's important to be able to help both of them and or vice versa, right? Moving forward.
Well, if I'm going to like look at my pairs of wingers, I think Quinn Peterka can still play together. And we saw JJ producing at a really good level. And Quinn had a move forward, and then it's kind of slowed down a little bit. But those two could be another pair. Like, that's my pair. Zucker and Tuck, that's my pair. Thompson and... who knows? I'm leaving that spot open. That's a pair. But if I'm looking at a sentiment, McLeod does really well with Tuck and Zucker. But maybe, depend if you want to protect Kulik or not, or if you're going to get another centerman to be in your top three. Mm-hmm. Like in a perfect world, I'd say Zucker, McLeod, Tuck. Those three together could be that veteran, that group that can defend against the best lines, but also produce. That's how I would see it. But then that would leave you with Kulik and Quinn and Peterka. And I don't know that that's the best kind of combo altogether. Maybe it would work well. I mean, mm-hmm. like when we saw 2 years ago, Cousins, Quinn, Peterka work well. And maybe that would work well. Younger, you know, a little bit more energy, go and play and let's go. But I think McLeod, Zucker, and Tuck would probably be my line. That would be my go-to, right? End of a period. Hey, McLeod's line, you get out there. You know, end of a game. Big shift after a goal. McLeod line, get out there. Like that would be Tuck with Zucker and McLeod.
Sabres Flyers tonight. It's game 82, fan appreciation night, and look forward to seeing you in the building. Thank you for being along this year. We will have, of course, in arena row giveaways, discounts at concessions, and of course at the team store. And Alex Tuck, bobbleheads for the first 15,000 fans. You can visit sabres.com/tickets, get yours. And again, look forward to seeing you tonight. Shayna Goldman on the playoffs next on Sabres Live.